Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have a great show for you today. Everyone stayed up late to watch LeBron do a couple things. We'll get to that in a second.
I ain't gonna lie.
Okay, well, don't.
I did.
That's why I'm exhausted. AB could be dealt any minute now. Kevin Durant, he's got 1 foot out the door. But as we mentioned, we're starting with a big number. That number is 32,311. Haven't started a show with that number before. LeBron James making history last night. Sporting sneakers with a message to Michael Jordan. Why? Because he passed his idol for fourth all-time on the NBA's scoring list. Now trailing just Kareem, Karl, and Kobe. LeBron said this ranks up there with winning a championship. Emotional tribute to him during the game. Nice from both teams. Last night, after the game, more from LeBron on the big milestone.
A lot of stuff that I've done in my career. This ranks right up there at the top. We're winning a championship. For a kid from Akron, Ohio, that needed inspiration and needed some type of positive influence, MJ was that guy for me. And I watched him from afar. Wanted to be like MJ. Wanted to shoot fadeaways like MJ. Wanted to stick my tongue out on dunks like MJ. Wanted to wear my sneakers like MJ. I wanted kids to look up to me at some point like MJ, and it's crazy, to be honest. It's beyond crazy.
Guys, we spent so much time this season talking about LeBron's legacy and what going to the Lakers does for it and the championships and all of it. But this particular accomplishment, CC, what does it mean for his legacy?
Well, for LeBron, it's well-earned. You're talking about a player, too, that doesn't want to be known as a scorer. Even in his interviews of late, I saw Brian Windhorst. He was doing some stuff, and he was like, LeBron despises being known as a scorer. He wants to be known as a pass first, and you can hear that after the game. But it speaks to the great ability he has as a basketball player, not only to score the basketball, but his ability to be able to stay healthy, his ability to be consistent, to play in the number of games that he's played in. The longevity is basically second to none. We could talk about Karl Malone, we could talk about Kareem and LeBron. That's just a rare group of guys that are going to be able to withstand the wear and tear. It's not something, when you looked at LeBron James in his youth, in his first 4 or 5 years, said, man, will he be the all-time leading scorer one day in the NBA? Like, there's no chance. Will he ever pass Michael Jordan as a scorer? There's no chance. Well, now that especially since LeBron's turned 30 and he's gotten into fitness and the eating, like that part's been at a different level. It's an amazing accomplishment. But if you want to be considered one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in the world, this is something LeBron's got to have. He's got the playoff where he scored more than Jordan in the playoffs. Now he's got the regular season because, say, 10 years from now, this will mean a lot more than it means today.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people that didn't see Michael Jordan, even though they swore up and down that they did. All right? They watched videos and everything. And there's going to be a lot of people that only saw a little bit of LeBron. So it's just going to be basically list. Nick and his list. People making lists. How many points? How many assists? How many rebounds? And LeBron's going to be in rare air and the only one that can get on the scoring and assist list to that high mark that he's at. It's going to make him a special basketball player. So he's going to have to be included in the conversation. Was he one of the best basketball players ever? Which we can answer now. To me, he's still not the best basketball player ever, and that's Michael Jordan. So even though he passed him in playoff points and passed him in regular season points, Michael and what he was able to do in the playoffs, the six championships, the six MVPs, the five MVPs in the regular season, 9 times first team, all defensive team, that's why Michael Jordan is the best player. So these are things that LeBron's going to need to continue being in the conversation with MJ.
Because, as C's point is, the statistics are going to be overwhelming and avalanche in LeBron's favor. And the overall counting stats are already an overwhelming avalanche in LeBron's favor. But we're going to talk about this throughout the day. So we don't have to do LeBron versus Jordan hardcore right now. I want to talk about what this moment was. Because LeBron alluded to it and said it. This is the most important individual accomplishment of his career. The most individual. So not he said he lines up right with the championships. He talked more about how the championship in Cleveland kind of set aside from the other two. But this means more to him than the MVPs. When LeBron got to the league, I can definitively, without a question, he believed, oh, I'll be a league MVP one day. I'll be the best player in the league one day. I don't think he thought until, as he mentioned, maybe the last 5 to 6, 7 years, I'm going to score more points than Michael Jordan. I could finish my career with more assists than Magic and more points than Michael. That is what makes him such a singularly unique basketball player, because his entire basketball ethos, to much criticism over the years, has been make the right play, as opposed to the Jordan ethos, which was make the play. And it's not a value judgment about which one's better, but there was the idea of, for a lot of players and a lot of players that idolized Mike, Iverson, Kobe, that means I've got to do it by myself scoring. LeBron's ethos has always been, we've got to make the right basketball play. But what he, and so to have that mindset and still have scored more points and still be climbing on the list is remarkable. And what LeBron said about the kid from Akron, he had a long quote about the inspiration that Jordan was for him. And I think that's important. This is why this was such a big moment for Kobe. Because Kobe, people thought Kobe was maybe holding on at the end because the last big thing he wanted to do was pass Michael Jordan in points. To surpass your idol in what your idol did best, which was score the basketball, it's got to be an unbelievable feeling. And you saw it on the bench where after it happened, put the towel over his face, seemingly right, overcome with emotion.
Is any of this dampened at all by the fact that the Lakers just aren't playing that well? I mean, does it take away from either his legacy or his accomplishments or this particular accomplishment at all?
Well, you'd like to be talking about the playoffs, but this is such a huge accomplishment that it supersedes everything else. And I think that part of the emotion, part of it's passing MJ, but I think part of it's too, the season's over with. And I think that this is the only significant moment LeBron's going to have this season. So when he was sitting over there and they were playing the tribute video and all that, but to know, man, the playoffs is going to start next month and we're not going to be involved in it, that's hard to stomach, because he's still chasing what he calls the ghost of MJ. He's still chasing it. Even though he went past it, he's still chasing it, because who Michael Jordan was in the postseason. So, yeah. Last night was a big moment for LeBron, and the idolization of Michael, I don't think LeBron is telling the full truth. I believe there's even a greater degree, because that was the type of impact that Michael Jordan had on, not only on the generation that we grew up in, but the generation and the two generations to be able to follow.
To me, these are two separate stories. The Lakers' struggles this season and a culmination of what is a now 16-year NBA career that is still going on.
But the reason why I said that is because he will have that purple on. He will have that Lakers jersey on. You say, oh, man, well, LeBron, when did he pass Jordan? Oh, in his first year with the Lakers. Because people won't be following it like we do, all right? But they will be able to identify. LeBron's got that difference. It's just no different than when we went to the Heat. It was like, wow, he looks different in that jersey. In this moment, this iconic moment, will be with him in the Lakers uniform. And under that story was, man, they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that will continue to be a story if the Lakers era for LeBron continues on this trajectory. If they don't ever get it together, if they don't ever have a long playoff run, then yeah, it will just be individual statistical accomplishment. But to me, these are two separate things. This was a guy, you say, see, you heard about him when he was 14 years old, 15 years old from William Wesley. He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and I went back and read that article this morning when he was 17 years old. And the headline of the article is "The Heir to MJ." And the first paragraph of the article quotes Michael Jordan asking a 17-year-old LeBron, "Where's your mom? Where's mama?" Because they had met each other about a year prior. The most hyped athlete ever, not only living up to the hype, but somehow exceeding the hype. That is the story of LeBron James. And last night was another mark on that side of the ledger, passing the man a lot of people believe to be, if not the greatest basketball player of all time, certainly the greatest scorer of all time. And now, as C mentioned, more points in the playoffs and more points in the regular season to go along with all the other stats in the regular season and playoffs.
We are just getting started talking about LeBron. Chris Broussard will be out here to give his take. We'll take a break now. Coming up, where will Antonio Brown end up? That is next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. We'll get to Antonio Brown in just a second, but first, couple plays from last night. Marquette, Seton Hall, Miles Powell goes up for it, but Ed Morrow Jr. denies him.
Look at this.
That is denial.
Oh, yeah, that's in the first row. Go get it, young fella. You can't do a underhand scoop that close to the basket with a guy.
Great timing.
Check this out. LSU's Marlon Taylor skying for the alley-oop jam against Florida.
I thought this was a bad pass. Wow.
Good. Now, that's embarrassing right there. Back door, catches the alley-oop.
Oh, lands on his head.
LSU's got a good basketball team, too, now. Oh, yeah. They could do some damage in March Madness.
All right, Cavs, Nets, D'Angelo Russell broke out the sham god against your guy, Nick.
Jetty. My guy, Jetty Osman. See, you tweeted about this play, right? You sent out the video when it happened. Look.
Yes. Oh, no, I was watching this one. I love watching the Nets, man. They get up and down the court. They shoot threes, and he's such a great story there. Came out of Ohio State, should have stayed in school, drafted by the Lakers, couldn't develop. But last night, Brooklyn was saying, thank you, Magic Johnson. The crowd was yelling.
Maybe most improved player in the league.
Oh, yeah, he's going to win that award this year.
Wild play results in an incredible dunk by Zach LaVine.
Let me see this again. Oh, that's a great save. Now, you know he's going to go up and get it.
Pretty.
One of the best dunkers alive.
Pretty, pretty.
Is that Archie Diacono with the save?
People don't talk about it, but if you're a free agent, Chicago's got some nice young pieces. I know AD hadn't mentioned he's from Chicago, but
it's an interesting one. It's an interesting one.
All right, moving on to the Antonio Brown saga. It has become a saga. According to reports, the star wide receiver expects to be dealt by the end of this week, despite AB seemingly bruising his trade value recently with a number of questionable comments. The yellow mustache notwithstanding, the Steelers are hoping to recoup a first-round pick in the deal. Washington, Oakland, Tennessee still in the mix for AB services as well, with three mystery teams out there. C, in your opinion, the best fit for Antonio Brown is where?
Well, the best fit for him, if we're being honest, would be to repair the situation.
Pittsburgh.
Yes. Call Ben, have someone call Ben. Hey, man, hit my line. Let's get together. I'm sorry. Yeah. That would be the best spot for him. Pittsburgh Steelers, because they are convinced this situation we can't salvage. But they're going to take a huge salary cap hit by trading him. Now, they're going to save the $2.5 million roster bonus, but that cap hit that they're going to take, can they put a championship team? So I just want to say that first. The best place for him is to stay in Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger. But AB, blonde mustache, blue hair and everything, that's not going to happen. It's going to be, I believe the Oakland Raiders is the best spot because they have the draft capital to be able to do it, especially at the towards the end of that first round. And John Gruden needs a big-time playmaker. I believe that they can come up with enough creative things in that offense to be able to get AB the ball because it's not only who needs a wide receiver, it's who can get him the football. You can't think that a guy that's had six straight 100-catch seasons is not going to want a football. So don't suggest some place where they can't get it to him from a creative standpoint or from a do they have a quarterback that can get the ball there to him. So I just believe that the Raiders, their lack of a wide receiver, they could basically take the pick that they got from Dallas.
Well, that's the key, right? Is it would Gruden also needs some good PR. Some good, like, to change the narrative a bit.
I just prefer some good football.
Right, players. But you can't get good football until September. And so...
No, good football players.
Sure. But and the point I'm making is, if the narrative is you essentially traded Amari Cooper for Antonio Brown, that's a win.
Sure.
That is a win for the Oakland Raiders. Now, Antonio Brown does not make a football team, and Antonio Brown could be going from Hall of Famer Big Ben to lame duck Derek Carr or potentially rookie Kyler Murray. We don't know who the quarterback in Oakland would be. I think from the team's perspective, which team should be most aggressive in getting Antonio Brown? The Raiders is who I was going to say. From Antonio's perspective, that obviously would not be first, second, or third on my list of
preferred
destinations.
No, if I'm Antonio, I want to go to Green Bay.
Yes.
I want to go to Aaron Rodgers. They could utilize him. I believe they're going to get off of Randall Cobb and his contract. They could utilize him, give him a bonus. He's at a good number right now. Give him a little bit of a bonus because he's got a couple years left on his deal. That's what I would do. I'd probably give him about $8 to $10 million to sign, which adds another $5 million to his base salary.
Of
it's going to make him make around $18 million over the course of that time, and let's do business.
How important is the quarterback to Antonio Brown? He's so talented. Some would say, regardless, he's going to have those numbers. But how important, when you're thinking of a destination, is the quarterback on that team?
Well, I think for his purposes, it obviously is maybe the most important factor. Like, if he's listing his preferred destinations, who their quarterback is, do they have a stable quarterback? Do they have a good quarterback? Should be at, if not, certainly near, if not at the top
but
of the list.
But let's look at the teams, because he's not making this choice. You have right. Washington, Oakland, and Tennessee as your top three. How comfortable are you guys with those offenses and those quarterbacks?
Well, but that's the problem, see, with
when... Well, that's the problem when you force a trade.
Right.
He's not... And to me, most wide receivers, Larry Fitzgerald is a realist. Most wide receivers, they're like, man, I want to go right and get some guaranteed money. I want to go, they're going to throw it to me a whole bunch. A lot of wide receivers, they're ignorant like him. They're like, I don't care about the quarterback. I don't think, well, AB, him and his agent, they don't have any control. But I don't think he realizes how important the quarterback is. So I don't think he's thinking about quarterback because if he was, he'd stay in Pittsburgh some type of way.
And maybe he doesn't have the quarterback situation ranked as high as I would think he should, because one of his initial preferred destination was San Francisco, and nobody knows if they have a great quarterback or even a good quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo is one of the biggest unknowns in football. We know that they think they have their franchise quarterback, and they paid him accordingly, but Washington has the most unknown quarterback situation in all of football. Tennessee is a guy who in year two looked like he was going to become the player he was drafted out of Oregon to be, and then was bad in year three and was injured and mediocre in year four. And Oakland, we just mentioned, like, I'm not certain Derek Carr is going to be their quarterback next year, and if he's not, it's going to be a
rookie. I think Derek Carr is a lot better than Mariota.
Sure.
So in Oakland, I believe he's a better situation throwing the ball down the field and consistency throwing the ball. In Tennessee, they're a running team. You watch Tennessee play, man, they're getting ready to run the ball. They have a bust at wide receiver in Davis from a couple years ago. He hadn't reached his potential. So, I mean, that would be a tough situation for AB. Like, I mean, he would go from one of the most prolific offenses, the most creative offenses, to one of the most predictable offenses.
The team you mentioned, though, which is also the team that I had written down as the square hole, square peg situation,
Green
is Green Bay. They have an extra first-round pick. They have a great quarterback. They have a new head coach. You have a maybe frustrated Aaron Rodgers. They might move off Randall Cobb.
Well, we did say there are a couple of mystery teams.
Right,
that could be one of
them. For all those reasons, Green Bay, to me, is the perfect situation.
The thing about Green Bay is they don't have the culture. Their fan base, the people who see them on a weekly basis, like, you think they want one of their players rolling up in a green Bentley, Rolls Royce? You think they want him some Blackhawk helicopter? No, so, yeah, like, from a football standpoint. But who they're selling to, their season ticket base, like, in that little tri-state area?
Sure.
He doesn't fit that. And that's a problem in Green Bay. Look at the type of players that have ever been like Antonio that were in Green Bay. Andre Bad Moon Rising, after he turned over, all right? He wasn't a problem. Typically, those type of players aren't attracted to Green Bay, and Green Bay and the organization have not been attracted to them.
And the fact that you have to go all the way back to Andre Rison, because I was trying to think since then, who is, like, the alleged problem child Green Bay's gone out and gotten? And I can't think of one.
I played against Green Bay for a long time, twice a year. That's just not something that they do, and I don't believe this player is going to change that.
And their biggest free agent acquisitions of the last generation are guys that not only great players, but really good good people. Charles Woodson, right. Julius Peppers, guys that have none of those concerns.
Yeah, you got to factor in the quarterback and also the coach and also how his personality, like you mentioned, fits in with the culture of the actual team. Take a break. Coming up, could the Cowboys defense hold them back from the Super Bowl next season? That's next on First Things First. Welterweight world champion Showtime Sean Porter defends his belt for the first time live in primetime Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Fox.
Let's go, Sean. Let's do this, bro.
Time for us to go viral. LeBron James passing Michael
Jordan.
I'm getting
ready to send Sean Porter a
message. Okay, last night for fourth place on the NBA all-time scoring list. Still talking. And his former teammates Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye had a special message for the Kang. Take a listen.
It's a huge accomplishment for a guy like him. It's shown his consistency of ball hogging. We're talking about Bron. We're talking about Bron, 13 away from Jordan. He was a huge ball hog.
He never
passed the ball.
Right on. Why don't you try and pass like the all-time assist leaders? Why don't you try and pass John Stockton instead of trying to pass
come
Kareem?
Come up off the rock, dribble in the air.
Can you do that? How about that?
It's ridiculous. It took him long enough. What is this, 19 years?
Yeah, I got it. It took him years.
Years.
What? God, if I kept playing, I would have passed.
I shot 14, 15 times a game.
Wow,
yeah, it was crazy.
What have you done?
Yeah. Anyways, congrats, man. You deserve it. You suck.
A better guy.
Yeah, you owe me a bottle.
Channing needs to hurry up and retire so he and RJ can take over the Players Only broadcast and do a Mystery Science Theater 3000 style broadcast. They're great.
Richard Jefferson's got a petition in Cleveland so that Shannon Fry can start his last game there. He's passing around trying to get people to sign it and everything because it's going to be Shannon Fry's last year. Those are LeBron's friends.
And clearly.
That's what your friends say about
him. And by the way, RJ, friend of the show, signed up for Twitter yesterday finally, right?
Yeah, check him out.
Richard RJeff24 on Twitter. You pointed this out to me. I hadn't seen it till this morning.
Yeah, man, you ain't up with social media.
Oh, I'm not up.
Man.
No, keeps me
you're
up on
there
the gram.
Sleeping and everything.
On Twitter.
I got to keep you fresh, man.
Snapchat.
Me and your wife, we the only cool things you got in your life, boy.
Hi, excuse me.
He said it right. He said it correct. My son's pretty cool,
you
too.
You forgot one.
Yeah, but he's my son. He forgot
him. That's not what he forgot. Time for stories to start your morning. Lincoln Riley stuck up for his former quarterback yesterday. Riley called Kyler Murray a tremendous leader after criticism of Murray surfaced after the combine. C, do you agree with Riley's assessment?
This is what I know about Lincoln Riley. Man, there's a handful of NFL owners that would love him coaching their football team. So Lincoln Riley is highly respected in the NFL. Man, Oklahoma knows that. That's why they gave him a contract extension so no one can grab him. Yeah, I respect Lincoln Riley, but this is what you got to do for your guys. You have to build stand up. When someone has a report like that, you have to build a stand up for them. That's what the college athletes always need. And Lincoln Riley did the right thing, stand up for his guy.
And yesterday on this network, right after the show, I thought Jenny Taft had some really strong comments supporting Kyler Murray. People don't know. She does a lot of college football coverage. She talked with Kyler multiple times throughout the year. I think she covered four or five Oklahoma games. The people that know Kyler seem to be going up against this Charlie Casserly report. Now, that doesn't mean he interviews great, but the leadership stuff can be a different category than how well you interview.
Well, go ahead, Jenny Taft.
She did a great job.
All right, to the NFL. Now, Landon Collins was not tagged by the Giants earlier this week, and according to reports, they could have traded him for a first-round pick this past season, but did not make the move. Nick, what is your reaction to this report?
This was my beef with the Giants' move, is the lack of consistency in philosophy and a plan moving forward. I don't mind you not trading him before last season. You thought you could be good. He's one of your better players, even if he has problems with coverage. When you're 1-7 and the season's lost and you see what you got for Eli Apple, what do you think you're going to get for Landon Collins? A first-round pick would have surprised me, but a second-round pick wouldn't have.
Yeah, I'm very surprised by this. And let's not forget, just because the NFL, we got involved in trades the last 2 years, this is not something the NFL general managers and front office people are used to doing. We are seeing a new time in the NFL. So thinking at the trade deadline, this is the NBA, it's not. And they shouldn't got rid of Landon Collins because the Giants did not know at that time if he was going to be part of the team moving into the future.
All right, let's move on to the Boston Celtics now. They got a win over the Kings last night in a Gordon Hayward game-winning basket. But a nice start to their West Coast swing so far. Two games, two wins. Nick, how big was this for Hayward and the Celtics?
It was big, particularly because Gordon wasn't following up his big 30-point game with another big game. He had 10 points going into that moment. He had just fouled Buddy Hield on a three.
Bad mistake.
The Celtics were up three, and he fouled Buddy on a three to allow the Kings to tie the basketball game. But so this is a great moment because this would have undone a lot of the good feelings that they got from blowing out the Warriors if they take a couple step backs against a good fighting for the playoffs Kings team.
I think it was a good moment because we have seen Gordon Hayward lose his confidence. We know he's not as athletic. He didn't have a great game, made a bad mistake. Mentally, he could have been in the dumps. But they gave him the ball at the end. Kyrie wasn't playing or wasn't in the game because of a thigh contusion. So Gordon Hayward making a buzzer beater for the Celtics in a tied-up game, that's a huge moment moving forward. The last two nights, the Celtics, man, they've really improved. Looking forward to see how they do the rest of the month.
All right, finally, bit of an odd scene at the Lakers game last night with the Lakers in the midst of losing their fourth game in a row. They lost last night in the midst of missing the playoffs entirely. Rajon Rondo, who's had a tough stretch lately, was seen sitting in a courtside seat far away from the Lakers bench. Surprisingly or not surprisingly, neither Luke Walton nor any of his teammates brought him back to where the team actually sits. Nick, what'd you make of this?
I don't make much of this. Now, there's a discussion about Rondo that needs to be had, but this, it's very interesting because you can kind of tell, even during the broadcast, how closely people are really watching. So during the Lakers game, the late-night game that they lost a couple nights ago, I can't even remember at this point who they were playing.
Clippers.
The Clippers game. LeBron had the ball rolled up to him up the court, and at the end of a quarter, you get a 2-for-1. It rolled all the way to three-point line, and he shot it. And the broadcasters were saying, I've never seen anything like this. They kept going on. He had done it the exact same thing in the exact same situation a couple nights before. Why do I bring that up? Rondo did this exact same thing the night that we all panicked because LeBron was sitting with a big gap between he and his teammates at the end, the one end of the bench. Rondo was doing this. Rondo said after the game he's done it 7 or 8 times this year that he tries to sit in the courtside seats at this point in the game. Now, you can say it's a bad thing, it's being a bad teammate, but it's not new. It's not something that we haven't seen from Rajon Rondo repeatedly throughout the year. Now, listen, Rondo, there's a reason there's the playoff Rondo, right? Rondo when he's in a good place mentally, in a good place emotionally, playing at his best. This is mercurial, regular season, pouting Rondo. And to me, the Rondo story is he's the only of the Lakers' prominent players that's been a negative on the court with LeBron. LeBron plus Kuz, Ingram, Lonzo when he was healthy, all of them have been plus in plus-minus for the season. Rondo's, Tom Haberstroh had it yesterday, minus 55. The LeBron-Rondo combination, which I thought would work, has not worked out at all. He doesn't seem happy. He knows he's on his way out. All of that, to me, is a bigger, real story for the Lakers and what's gone wrong than Rondo sitting courtside instead of with his teammates.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about him sitting there because they're out of it. Their season's over with, and when you have veteran players, especially that have won championships, what do you think he's in L.A. for? Sightseeing? Just to bring his kids out of another school? No. He's there to win. When you sign players like him, you expect, man, the value of these players is going to be over the course of an 82-game season, but it's also going to be in those tough playoff series. That's what you – and then now, with it being March and them having – what's their playoff chances now? I mean, literally
like
today.
Like 0.4%.
Oh, okay. That will get veteran players sitting in the stands. So I didn't have a problem with it. Like, I didn't, and I knew that he had done it a couple of times earlier in the season. I believe sometimes people, they start looking for stuff. They want to start pointing fingers. But what's happened to Rondo, it's not his fault. He's had a couple different injuries where he's missed a lot of time. But also, Rondo is not a starting point guard. It's not his fault he's playing all those minutes with LeBron. He was supposed to be playing with the second unit. But Lonzo Ball's inability to stay healthy made Rondo play more. At this stage of Rondo's career, Rondo shouldn't be playing all those minutes.
And that's not what he was brought there for. He was brought there to help push Lonzo in practice, to be a guy who, even though he has sometimes had some attitude problems, he's actually been very good with young players. In Chicago, when he was there, his beef wasn't with the older players. He was on the side of the younger players. You have a young roster in Los Angeles. LeBron's not known. He has never played with a bunch of young guys. There were a lot of reasons they thought Rondo would be a good leader during the regular season and then play his best basketball during the postseason, which we've seen repeatedly from him in his career, up to and including last year when he was excellent for the Pelicans, particularly once
I got more problem with him jacking up all them threes.
Man,
that right there is criminal.
every night now. Like, you're open for a reason. I mean, he shot 7 threes in the first 6 minutes of a game a few days ago.
Lakers lost to the Nuggets last night, their 6th loss in their last 7 games. All right, let's talk some football. Moving on to the Cowboys, coming off an NFC East title. Their goal, like all 31 other teams in the league, improve their team. But unlike a lot of those other teams, they won't be doing it by signing a big-time player in the secondary. Dallas has no interest in signing safeties Earl Thomas, Landon Collins, or Eric Weddle due to their high asking prices. CC, you think we should be worried about the Cowboys' defense?
I'm not going to be worried about their defense. I think that they're going to be, when you're in this new salary cap era that we have, there's a few positions that you just have to do patchwork. Like, you have to go around the league and see, man, what one of these guys can I get at the right price to be able to patch up my lineup so that I don't go over the cap. If you talk about tight ends in the last several years, they've emerged as major pass catchers, game changers. The safety position, it hadn't. Last year in free agency, man, there was no market. So people talked about potential collusion with Eric Reed, but also there wasn't a market for safeties. There will be a market. But throughout the NFL, over the last 5 years, the value of safeties has gone down. Just we've seen the emergence of running backs go up in the last 5 years. Safeties go down because they can dictate to the offense what coverage you're playing in based on what their skill set is. So a lot of times when you sign guys like Landon Collins, where you know he's going to be an in-the-box safety, he gives me an indicator before, when I come out the huddle, of what coverage. So I have a huge advantage when you have these guys who can't be dual safeties, where they can't play in the hole deep and play middle of the field and also play in the box. And there's only a few of those guys out there.
Teams right now would rather have a really good third corner, a really good nickel corner.
He's more valuable.
Right. In today's NFL, when you're playing 3 wide receiver, what, 70%+ of the time? Like, that's been the paradigm shift. Now, as far as the Cowboys specifically, man, this is what we were saying throughout the year when we were prognosticating what the team would look like next year, that they are going to have to get better production from essentially the same team. I know a lot of the folks in Dallas were talking about all this cap space they're going to have. Okay, but then we started checking it off. You want to keep DeMarcus Lawrence? Not only right now are they keeping him, but it's at the franchise tag number, which means it's the full $20 million on your books right now. If you sign him to an extension, even if it's more than $20 million a year, you could make this year's cap hit $8 million because you can, you know, basically, you can prorate the signing bonus. They need the money for Amari. They need the money for Zeke. They need the money for Dak. Like, this was what the situation the Cowboys were always going to be in was you're going to have to make do with essentially the same team as last year, which is one of the reasons why Chris and I both, the $3.5 million gift to Jason Witten, like, you can't get Landon Collins, you can't get Tyrann Mathieu for $3.5 million. I get it. But when you are removing yourself from the market for a position of need,
right,
and you're giving out lifetime achievement award contracts to save a guy from a broadcasting career, that's not how you make your team take the next step in 2019.
Give me a list of priorities if you're running the Cowboys right now that you think absolutely have to get signed at this point, because Nick mentioned it. You got Dak, you got Zeke, you got Amari, you got DeMarcus. You have a number of people, and then you have your defense, your safeties, your offensive line. Where do you think
You have to sign your guys. You have to sign your guys that have played well. Like, for one, they're going to definitely pay with the franchise tag. They've let you know, we're going to pay him. DeMarcus Lawrence, we put a tag on him. He's earned this. He's a Pro Bowl player. He's earned this. But one of the names people aren't mentioning is Byron Jones. Their ability to move him from safety to corner. He was a high draft pick a number of years ago. They also have to spend some money on him. So you can't go out and give money to all these other guys. I know it's sexy. I know Earl went to school at University of Texas. He's made a, you know, outwardly, he said, I want to go to, but that doesn't mean he's a good fit. And I don't know why people keep saying it. And just because you can get him, can't get him, that does not mean you're going to have a problem defensively. The Dallas got those mid-round picks. You can get a guy in this year's defense. This is the best defensive prospects I have seen in the NFL since I've been in television. I'm talking about, we cannot have an offensive player drafted in the first round and you will be satisfied. 32 defensive player. I mean, they are stacked. Defensive linemen, linebackers, safety. So you can utilize the draft to get you a young guy who can run, who you can get him under that rookie deal and still have a great defense next year. So I'm not consumed with the Dallas Cowboys and who they're going to have at safety. They got bigger priorities, and I believe those will be filled.
When Chris talks about the draft, I know we've spent a lot of time talking about Haskins and Murray, but other than those quarterbacks, the best players, the most talked about players, are they're almost all either edge guys, defensive tackles, Greedy Williams from LSU. The first non-quarterback offensive player we're talking about this draft is who? That DK Metcalf, the kid from Ole Miss, who is an absolute workout freak, but was not a wildly productive college football player. For the Cowboys, the Byron Jones thing, that's the forward-thinking thing that I hope the Cowboys are looking at, because he's not a pending free agent. People should understand that. He's got a year left, but he played great football last year. And if you don't re-sign him now, then you're in the franchise tag game again. Then all of a sudden you're in the same position.
He has the ability to play corner and safety.
Right.
That right there, none of those guys on that list have that ability.
And so, I mean, last year he was a great football player, had an excellent season. They didn't have the foresight. They weren't able to sign DeMarcus Lawrence early. So because of that, they franchised him last year. That's $17 million on their cap. Franchise him this year, it's $20 million on their cap. So when we're talking about guys that they got to re-sign, Byron Jones, he's not one of the guys you could lose, but he's one of the guys you want to re-sign now. So the money, they got $28 million left in cap space. How much do we think Zeke, Dak, Amari are going to get raises? Plus, if you include Byron Jones, that's basically all your money.
There's your money right there. All right, take a break. Back to basketball. Big night last night. Did LeBron passing Michael Jordan in scoring cement him as the GOAT? It's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, FS1 NBA insider Chris Broussard joins us now.
What
hey, Chris.
Up, my brother.
Welcome, man.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about LeBron in a bit. I was just waiting for you. I didn't know if you wanted to take a full sip. I was just giving you the courtesy of...
What are we talking about here?
Quenching your thirst, CC. We're talking KD and the Warriors, Broussard. Golden State trying to win their third straight NBA title. Golden State also trying to win back the services of Kevin Durant long term. According to reports, some members of the Warriors organization feel KD has one foot out the door already. Broussard, you mentioned there might be issues with him coming to New York at this point. Why would Kevin Durant stay in Golden State? What's the case for him staying where he is?
Yeah, I've made the argument on this show before that I think it'd be great for him to stay and go for a fourth straight ring.
Yes.
All the guys, Magic, MJ, LeBron, Kobe, Shaq, all that he's compared to have never won four straight. Only Bill Russell.
Right.
And so if he had that on his resume, I mean, that'd be huge. But watching this season unfold with how difficult, you know, the struggles they're having this year, he and Draymond going at it, the tension there is with the team, there's a reason those guys didn't win four straight, you know, because it's very difficult mentally, emotionally, not to mention physically. So it appears that would be not quite unrealistic, but very difficult. If they win it this year, for them to come back and do it a four straight year, it just might be too tough. And look, he's got two great options, in my opinion, New York and the Clippers outside of Golden State. So I as much as I'd like to see him get four straight, I don't think he would
Why do you think he is – I know we've talked a lot about Kyrie's levels of happiness and his inner – but I thought the other night when he was – after they got blown out by the Celtics, him – I don't want to say going at Steve Kerr, but his post-game press conference juxtaposed to Steph Curry's, where right. Steph Curry kept the even keel. You said he's the Tim Duncan for – Duncan for the Golden State Warriors. And Kerr predates Durant. And Kerr is incredibly popular within that locker room. And Durant just seems generally irritated with the situation.
Well, I thought he had a legitimate reason after the game. What he questioned was, Steve Kerr talked about, now we need to play, we need to be a little more mean, a little more intense before and during the season. And, yeah, angry. And earlier in the season, they were talking about, man, let's play with a little more joy. Let's be happy. So that was the message point.
That's Kerr's mantra, really. Well, it was the joy, and then he contradicted it.
Yeah, but now because we lose this game, don't go behind the team. Because he should have told the team that after the game, before he told the media that. Like, you can't change your messaging point to the media before you talk to the team because you have to be consistent. And he said, oh, he said that. Oh, I thought he was talking about play with some joy. So that's what he should be able to do. He has the right to be able to do that because Steve Kerr changed, a message point that we had. And then he went on to being like, no, it's about playing with some more joy. So I don't have a problem with that. I think people miscalculate the amount of stress that NBA players, and I'm going to say it's stress, because dealing with the media, I'm part of the media now, but we used to have a system in Minnesota. And when you only have 16 games and you only play one game a week, all right, and we only typically have two media appearances that we have to do. We have one scheduled during the week, and we're definitely going to talk after the game. But you're talking about 82 games. Now you're talking about all these shoot-arounds.
Right, right, twice
a day.
There's
so many more opportunities. So I'm not making excuses for NBA players, but I'm looking at the schedule. I'm looking at how many sound bites, how many times people can get them tripped up. And I didn't like talking to the media because, to me, I got a job to do. And catching the football, going across the middle, being in shape, has nothing to do with the media. They might think they help you do your job. You help them do their job. So I'm taking it back to my days, and there was also some
contentious moments.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Like, because I can't answer all the questions, and I can't tell them the truth all the time. So what these media, the basketball players, what they're facing with the media, we should get used to this and maybe have some, not empathy, but understanding of how many times, how many days a week they have a mic in their face where someone is trying to trip them up. Because we don't see all and hear all the sound bites and everything that you get. You get a lot of bad questions from local people, people trying to make a mark, trying to get a sound bite, trying to please their boss.
Trying to bait you.
Yeah, trying to please their boss. So I wouldn't be surprised. I know the NBA, they made the season longer, but this is not going to get any easier for the players to deal with. Now, it's a part of the job. It's a part of your responsibility, but we better understand what they're going through, and we better start looking at it a little bit different if we're going to understand this modern-day athlete.
When I was a beat writer covering, you know, the Cavaliers, the Nets, the Knicks, I talked to some players, because, look, I was at every shoot-around. I was at every practice. I'm in the locker room before every game, after game, and I would get sick of going seeing the players. Because it's like every day we're asking a lot of the same questions, and I would talk to them. I know you get tired of seeing me.
Right.
I'm here. So there should be an understanding. And I think with KD, I mentioned that I've been told KD and Kyrie were a little leery of New York. Not saying they won't come,
no,
but a little bit leery just because of the media.
It's something that should be discussed between
right,
the two of them.
They should consider it. Now, what I would say is that when you played and when I was a beat writer before the internet, it was a little different. New York was more different than everywhere else.
New
York's known for sensationalism. Right. And yeah, and the internet was just come, but it wasn't as big of a factor as now.
Yes.
But the internet, New York's known for sensationalism, tabloid journalism. Now that's kind of throughout the country. Because, you know, you can
Twitter.
So it's not right.
That's
so,
why I don't think going to the Knicks different. Is as jarring.
Right, I agree. It's a little bit different, but it's not as much.
I understand there's going to be every city doesn't have a New York Post, and I get that. And every city doesn't have the intense scrutiny. But, you know, Philly's pretty intense, by the way. Boston local media is pretty intense.
And the national media is covering
But the national media covers everyone.
Right.
The internet covers everyone. And so a lot of these guys, it's not a beef typically with the local guys. Not all.
You know what I mean? Right.
Because they do
not
get relationships with them. And for Durant, when it comes to the Warriors, everything he has done off the court over the last 9 to 12 months has been setting up for New York. Now, everything he's doing with Rich Kleinman, the office space that they're trying to set up, there's the element of LeBron's now on the West Coast, kind of is sucking up that air from the media. The Kevin Durant's ability to go to New York and be the star in the biggest city in the country. And Kevin Durant is in, and Rich Kleinman, to his credit, the mogul business. They have real estate deals. They're doing media stuff, their own media company. So it would be, to me, it would take a massive shift or a seismic event for Kevin Durant to change that course.
I don't think he'll go to New York by himself, and I don't think he should.
But because of the move they made.
If you go with Kyrie or somebody
KD
else.
KD will be a huge draw. Like, because of the move they made, it was one of the reasons the Kristaps trade, even if you love Kristaps as a player, was such a great move for the Knicks. Because now they don't have to do anything this summer to be able to sign two guys.
KD will be talking with AD, with Kyrie. I just don't think you should go there alone because you won't win at a high level alone.
No, not in the NBA.
And if you don't win in New York, it's horrible. And that's where the media will really get bad. Let me say this last thing quickly about KD. In discussions with him and what he said about Kerr the other night, one thing I've learned about KD, he just wants to speak his mind. And whether it's some no-name going at him on Instagram, whether it's a media person saying something, he's going to confront you. Or Steve Kerr. He's going to say his mind just because that seems to be the type of person he is.
Can I follow up? Just one quick question. I'm sorry to something you said about winning in New York. What do you think winning in New York means, though? Like, you said it's horrible
winning
if you don't win.
If KD went to New York and won a title,
that's the best. But I'm
it
saying,
would mean no, more. Oh, he's got to win a championship.
Compared to where they were, all you got to do at this point for the last couple of years, get them into the playoffs.
That'd be nice initially.
No, no, no. That's franchise
initially,
and that's local
right.
people.
Right.
But KD is trying to be one of the biggest names that's ever played in sports, and how that gets him into other businesses. No, we're fans, all right? He's not a fan. Right. He's making a decision that would change his life. That's why New York is a perfect fit for the next
one. All right, we got to take a break. Chris, stick around. Coming up, why was Rondo blowing off his teammates yesterday? That's next on First Things First. We are back here with Chris Broussard. We're going viral. LeBron James passed Michael Jordan last night for fourth place on the NBA all-time scoring list. He got a special message from his I Promise School students. Nice. Take a listen to this.
Hi, Mr. LeBron. My name is Ray Mill, and congratulations for the fourth NBA scoring list and passing Michael Jordan. Have a good day.
Hi, Mr. LeBron. I would like to congratulate you for passing the scoring in fourth place and passing Michael Jordan.
Congrats, Mr. LeBron, for scoring in fourth place and passing Michael Jordan. By the way, this is Xavier, one of your ambassadors.
Some of these kids should offer up their services to coach up Antonio Brown on his cameo messages.
The kids got a couple notes. Right. One Michael Jordan, one the number four.
Right,
and they were going to put together their message no matter what. But that was really sweet. It was very nice to see. Speaking of the Lakers, who were in the midst of losing their fourth game in a row and missing the playoffs entirely, Rajon Rondo, who's had a frustrating stretch recently, was seen sitting in a courtside seat away from the Lakers bench. Surprisingly, or should we say not surprisingly, neither Luke Walton nor any of his teammates brought him back to where the team actually sits. Broussard, what do you make of this? Optics.
Well, this was worse. Everybody made a big deal out of LeBron being, you know, three seats over from his teammates. This was much worse in reality and optically. Like, it just shows Rondo's disconnecting, and he's just fed up with the circus. Because Rondo's a no-nonsense type guy. And his name was in
those training season, or did when he signed him, like it was?
No, he's always been that way.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think he expected this type of circus, you know. And I think he's just fed up with it. And look, Mark Jackson was on the broadcast, and rightly so, saying, "Look, Luke or somebody's got to go get him." If Luke had gone over there and tried to get him, may have gotten ugly.
Yeah, Mark Jackson, that's the wrong advice.
When
he is on the job, do something that is totally different than what they would normally do. I have learned this through experience. You need to let that grown man work out his situation. So him trying to give the advice that, oh, someone on his team should go over there and make him, he's sitting over there for a reason. It's just like this. When you call someone and you leave a message and then you happen to see them be like, hey, I left you a message. There's a reason why they didn't call you back, Chris, because they didn't want to talk to you. He didn't want to talk to anyone on the bench. Didn't want to talk to the players, didn't want to talk to the coaches. Now, it might be a bad look optically, but who was he harming there? Who was he harming?
It just speaks volumes. And I agree. Look, he's gone at Rick Carlisle, Doc Rivers, and George Karl. Three really strong-minded coaches. He definitely would have won it, Luke Walton. No, in that situation.
And if Luke was going to try to stop this from happening, he should have tried to stop it from happening one of the other half dozen times it happened earlier this season. The day LeBron, the Pacers loss, is the day LeBron was three right. seats down from everybody. Rondo did the same little, damn thing.
Not quite as right.
Rondo that said after the game obvious, is, listen, yeah. I go to where there's the open seat. He's like, I've done this through my career. He said, you guys haven't seen it as much in Los Angeles this year because our home games, those seats are never empty. He said, those people stay. Now, maybe that's Rondo just creating a justification. But if your team is good and your team is competing for the playoffs and in the playoffs, I believe Rajon Rondo is an asset. I think he's an asset in a lot of ways. If your season has gone sideways, Rajon Rondo is not a guy you want there. We know this. Like, this is who he has been in this stage of his career. The issue with Rondo and the Lakers is, Tom Haberstroh pointed this out, so I looked it up with Dusty, and it's correct. LeBron plus any player has been a positive. LeBron plus Kuz, LeBron plus Hart, LeBron plus Lonzo in two-man lineups, except for LeBron plus Rondo. That combination has not worked out on the court at all. That, to go along with the injuries, to go along with the way they built the team, to go along with the coaching, is a big part of why this season is a lost season. Not because Rondo's being a bit of a prima donna, if you want to call it that, and sitting away from everybody. And I agree with you entirely that Mark Jackson's advice, that could have been a bad scene, man. Like, Rondo is not, he doesn't have much back down in him for good or for bad. And I don't think he would have responded. What's Luke Walton going to do? Grab him, like, tug him on his
arm? I know for certain Mark Jackson didn't know that he had done it a half dozen other times. Anytime you're trying to put together a roster like this where you're waiting, oh, man, we can only got a few guys for a few spots so we can keep open next year so we can get another max deal, this is what you end up buying.
We talk about how much LeBron's optics, antics, or the things that he does affects the younger guys on the team. Did this have any effect on the young guys?
Blame everything on LeBron.
Rondo. Answer the question. She was saying, does what Rondo did affect?
This is what we say for other players. Excuse me. All right. We always say that, man, these young guys. Yeah, these. They ain't playing. Lonzo ain't playing. Like, he was supposed to be there being a backup. When you have Rondo in the last 4 years, 4 months, and a few days, he's played on six teams. All right? And this is not the first time we have seen this. The head coach, Rick Carlisle, told him to call a play. Rondo waved him off, told him F that.
Second violation.
Yeah, I'll call the own play. So this is not surprising to me. You didn't bring Rondo in there to have a negative impact because he shows up to work, he plays hard, and he's a no-nonsense guy. So the young players, there's so many good attributes of Rondo that they are supposed to get from this. Normal human beings know not to go sit down in the front row in the expensive seats.
Right. Now, I don't think Rondo's a problem. I think that he's a leader in that locker room. Like, even when he was in Chicago and they were
young guys.
The young guys are drawn to him. He's a very intelligent player. I don't think he's a problem at all. I think this is not a cause of something, but more of an effect. This just is emblematic of the disconnect with this team. And to your question, Jenna, I don't really think it can get any worse. I really don't. Like, I think the AD trade saga so sapped this team emotionally and spiritually that's why they're done. Like, we talk about the young guys, Kuzma and Ingram, their numbers since the deadline. Oh, they're playing well. Well, offensively they are. Because no matter how upset I am, I want to get my numbers.
Oh, no.
Right. I want to score. But it's defense.
Team defense as a whole. Like, LeBron's been catching all the hell for it, but the team defense with him, LeBron on the court, has been really bad. With him off the court, has been a tire fire.
But here's why. Because trust, camaraderie, chemistry is a part of defense.
And effort.
And early in the season, they were all in on LeBron. So they're willing to cover up for him and know he's not going to hustle as much because he's older and he's got to carry the offense. Now, after the AD stuff, they're not willing to cover
up. Himself.
Right. So that's why the trust is gone and the defense is falling apart.
And to an element, you could make the argument one of the reasons that the younger guys' offensive numbers are up is because we talk about this all the time when star offensive players, when Harden a few years ago was catching hell for terrible defense. It's like, well, he's expending all his energy on the offensive end. There might have been earlier in the season when the younger players' numbers weren't as good, they were expending more energy on defense And you know, so on offense, they weren't as efficient. Now, if you're just – if everyone's just basically on a give-up on defense, then you should be at least marginally better on the offensive end.
All right, Chris, see you a little bit later on in the show. Take a break. Coming up, Lincoln Riley defends Kyler Murray next on First Things First. On Sunday, the Monster Energy Cup Series heads to Phoenix as the world's best drivers battle it out in the desert. It all starts at 3:30 Eastern, only on Fox and on the Fox Sports app. We will get to Kyler Murray in a second, but first, check out LSU's Marlon Taylor skying for the alley-oop jam against Florida.
Nice catch going back door. Watch out for LSU, March Madness, as you're making out your bracket. Watch out for LSU. Very
That's
surprising.
That's an embarrassing play for the defender, man. Get land on like that.
Spurs and Hawks, Derek White slamming it over Alex Len.
He's been a good dunker this year, man. We've had him in a bunch of these butt-first highlights, Derek White. Hawks wearing C. I know why you like this highlight, though. What are the Hawks wearing? Jerseys that make them recognizable. Not the powder blue ones that had y'all confused a couple days ago.
I thought you had
ago.
A trick question for me.
Oh, Cavs
oh sorry. I just Goodness looked. Gracious. I had to answer it
good
for
Lord
you.
D'Angelo Russell breaking out the Sham God against Jetty Osman.
Now, this was nasty right here. I saw this during the game. The Sham God, when you throw the ball out in front of you, Richard Jefferson was also talking about it in the telecast, crosses him over. Oh, most improved now. Lakers, this is your basketball development program. Go to Brooklyn, go to the Pelicans, and your players will get better.
Wizards and Mavs, Bradley Beal.
All right, so you don't see this as part of his game that often. Bradley Beal, a very good defender, an excellent spot-up shooter. But going in and dunking on people, he don't have many of these highlights each year. Good job.
Yeah, that's not something Bradley Beal's going to do. He got them J's on his feet, though. Them J's make you do things like this. I wonder in 20 years would people be wearing LeBrons on their feet?
Probably not.
Oh, probably construction workers out there working on buildings.
Time up.
Combat boots.
Time now for your Subway Choice moment. Lincoln Riley stuck up for his former quarterback yesterday. Riley called Kyler Murray a tremendous leader after criticism of Murray surfaced after the combine. CC, you agree with Riley's assessment?
Well, this is the thing. Lincoln Riley's got a responsibility, and that's to be able to protect his quarterback. But I like the fact that he went back and also talked to a lot of people that were in the room. He just didn't say, oh, my experience with Kyler. He was like, no, I talked to NFL personnel, and what they told me about the meetings is totally different than what someone is reporting. So I'm glad he did his homework. And this one thing that we should know about Lincoln Riley. The NFL is in love with Lincoln Riley, not just by how he's changed Oklahoma and their program, the offense that they run. The difference between him and Cliff Kingsbury is his offenses have more balance. They have better pass protection. So they think that his offense, and based on what Baker Mayfield did last year, they believe that his system will survive in pro football. So I like Lincoln Riley as a football coach. I'm glad he stood up for his guy yesterday.
And listen, the head coach is almost always going to stand up for their player going to the draft. It's very rare you have the Pete Carroll at USC saying, I think Mark Sanchez should stay. Like, usually guys are going to defend their player. And I thought that Kyler might interview poorly because I had seen him do other interviews. But I'm so frustrated. And honestly, just sick and tired of this obvious double standard when it comes to quarterbacks' intelligence. See, you talked about how long you've been around pro football, 30 years. I've been following the league, I would say, closely for the better part of 15. I can think of one white quarterback who, as part of his draft evaluation, there was a question, how smart is he? That was Johnny Manziel. And it was Johnny Manziel had enormous off-the-field question marks, was dealing with addiction issues, and so he got tarred with that. I can think of a half dozen black quarterbacks last 5 years. Seems like one in every three black quarterbacks, well, one of the questions is he smart enough? And it is impossible for me to believe there haven't been dumb white quarterbacks, but it is just assumed going into the draft. Now, sometimes when guys fail, after their career, we hear we couldn't pick up the offense. You sometimes hear it post-draft. But going into the draft, this is a criticism reserved exclusively for the black quarterbacks. Now, not all of them.
No, because Dwayne Haskins
not going to deal with it.
And Dwayne Haskins.
And so I'm not saying that all black quarterbacks people are question their intelligence. But the only quarterbacks who people question their intelligence
seem to
be black quarterbacks. We got to go back 45 years to find people saying this about Terry Bradshaw. Like, I don't, it is an obvious double standard. And it's one of the reasons why Casserly's comments, they irked me, because it's one thing to go with an anonymous report of a fact, right?
Right.
So you, a source told me that this team is trying to trade for Antonio Brown. That's an anonymous sourced fact, right? Mm-hmm. It's another thing to go with an anonymously sourced opinion. An anonymous source told me this is his opinion on this guy's acumen.
Right.
Like, there is, that bothers me, and this, every year we know this is going to happen.
How much do general managers, or when teams are looking at the draft and drafting guys, how much stock do they place in comments like this? I mean, will this actually drop Kyler Murray down notches on teams' draft boards?
Well, you have to realize, too, that I've been doing this for a long time, and when we start what we call the lying season, and that is after the college bowl games are over, regardless of what these guys have accomplished, what you start to see around the league through NFL personnel, agents, all you see is lies after lies after lies. So, no, I don't think this is going to drop them, but Charlie Casserly is a very respectable name in the industry. Are there teams out there that have gone to Charlie through the years to get an opinion on players? Yes, but this goes on every year. And the thing about it, Charlie or no one else, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, anyone, none of them are experts. If Mel Kiper was an expert, he'd be running an NFL team. He wouldn't have no scouting service. He'd have his own team. If I can pick the players better than anyone else, but now I got more respect than Mel, and Mel's the best at doing it, but, man, there is no
science
to this.
If it's a science at all, exactly.
But my thing is, you have to realize that when you get in this, in these windows of 4 months where these guys are training, you're going to hear a lot of negative things on and off the field about these players. That's how they mark them down, and that's how they decide not to be able to pay them. But the black quarterback is under a different set of scrutiny. I didn't have a problem with Charlie Casserly said. I had a problem with how aggressive he was. And if you're going to be that aggressive, you need to be able to back it up with some type of team or somebody. You can't have an anonymous source when you put a ding on a guy and you say, I've never heard an interview that went worse.
Board work worse than awful. That means the guy doesn't understand football.
Right.
And I just, again, I'm not saying.
Contradicted by what Lincoln Riley said.
Well, and I'm not even saying necessarily, maybe this was the worst interview ever, and maybe it was the worst board work ever. But it is just, it's amazing to me that last year, who was the quarterback who they questioned his intelligence?
Lamar.
Oh, it was Lamar. This year, it's kind of like, we have gotten so much better, obviously, than when Warren Moon had to go to Canada to play football 35 years ago. I get it. But it doesn't mean we're evaluating guys by the same standard. And there it is. I feel like teams go into these interviews with the assumption, okay, white quarterback, potentially first round pick, he must be sharp. And for the black quarterback, well, maybe he's a great athlete, but I gotta figure out if
I would say, Nick, I gotta push back on that, because I think NFL teams have gone far beyond that. And if you look at the number of African Americans we have playing in the playoffs, the number of African Americans we have making big time money. Now, are there stereotypes? Yes. Is the standard different? Yes. But what you're saying, I can't believe. I know that can't be true. I know it can't be true, because guys are getting more and more opportunities every single year. That doesn't mean there's a few out there. But if you look at the influx of college football on the NFL, we got 22 offensive-minded coaches coaching on the 32 teams, a lot of them coming from college. And in college, man, they don't care who he is. They don't care what color he is. Can he run? Can he throw?
Right.
And a lot of that is over in the NFL now. So I have to get some pushback as far as that being that strong comment there.
It is certainly, we are far better than we've ever been, and the numbers back it up. When you look at the number of black quarterbacks starting, not just in the playoffs, but across the league, it is triple what it was just 15 years ago when you could list number of black quarterbacks on one hand. It feels like this process, once they get drafted, it feels like this goes away. I don't hear a lot about the, you know, how sharp is the guy. It's these 4 months where this is the question mark associated with these quarterbacks more than anybody else.
All right, take a break. Go back to basketball. On the other side, coming up, how unlikely was LeBron passing Jordan in scoring, given the type of player that he is? We'll talk about that next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we are going viral. Jason Witten officially signed his contract yesterday to return to the Cowboys. and then started to recruit former teammate DeMarcus Ware to nearby Staples. Take a listen.
Hey, guys, look who I ran into. Talking What's a little up, bit baby? Of football. What's up?
See if you can lace it up.
Hey, I don't know. He's trying to get me. That guy's crazy. He is a nut. A nut.
Did you see what DeMarcus Ware wrote on Twitter about running into him? But one of them is, he said, who's wearing a suit at Staples at 7:30 at night? Jason Witten looked like he came just out the broadcast booth. That's his Monday Night Football apparel. What up, C? What up, C?
Wouldn't you love to know Come what they on, were both C. doing at Staples?
Well, I think DeMarcus Ware looked like he was maybe shopping for some printer ink. That stuff's expensive, hard
that's
to install,
what he, that's
runs
what he
out quickly.
Looking at, Lula,
I don't really
like?
Know what I feel like.
I
that's
think Witten was there getting
it.
Some ink for his hair. Man, he got a lot of hair on his hair. Good
hey,
Lord.
I got you there.
Jeez.
I was waiting for you. I was putting it at the rim. I'm like, come on, see? Go ahead.
Time for stories to start your morning. Landon
like
Collins
can't jump like I used to.
Was not tagged by the Giants earlier this week. And according to reports, they could have traded him for a first-round pick this past season. They did not make the move. However, Nick, what was your reaction to this report?
They knew what their cap situation was going to be coming up in 2019. They knew what Eli Manning was going to make. They knew their season was a disaster at 1-7 at the deadline. Getting nothing but a future compensatory pick, possibly, for Landon Collins, to me, is mismanagement. Even if you decide you shouldn't franchise him, you shouldn't extend him, you could have gotten more for him and something for him this season than a potential future compensatory pick in 2020. That's why that's my biggest criticism about all of this.
Yeah, you could have gotten something for him. If you're the NBA, wholesale change at the trade deadline, that's what they do. But this is the NFL. Now, we saw in the last 2 years, we've seen more trades in the NFL than any other history before. But that's not the way they do things. And that report, I don't believe that they could have gotten a first-round pick for him. Now, compensatory pick, they're going to get a third or fourth rounder for him. I think this is somebody else trying to hate on Dave Gettleman so people think that he doesn't know what he's doing. Gettleman, I'm with you, bro. Let that dude walk.
Okay.
All right, moving on to the Boston Celtics. They got a win over the Kings last night on a Gordon Hayward game-winning basket, but a nice start to their West Coast swing so far. Two games, two wins. Nick, how big was this for both Hayward and the Celtics?
As a huge play at the end, because Gordon Hayward, it would have been a bunch of steps backwards after his great game against the Warriors, the 30 points. He only had 10 points, and he fouled Buddy Hield up three with 10 seconds left to put them in this position. So that game winner gave him 12 points. That's not the important part. It overcame his foul, hit a game winner, back-to-back best moments as a Celtic. The great game and then the game-winning shot.
Yeah, and they ran the final set for him. He didn't have a great game, but they ran the final play, and he takes a guy off the bounce and hits a fadeaway. That shot was not defensible. So that, to me, if you look at the reaction from the bench, that's people cheering for each other. So that plane ride, now two wins, one without Kyrie, big things for the Celtics. Let's see if they can keep this momentum going through the month of March.
All right, let's finish up on LeBron's accomplishment last night. Just a little recap. He passed Michael Jordan to become the fourth highest scorer in NBA history. And according to LeBron, scoring has never been his primary focus.
I've always been a pass-first guy. I've always, since I started playing the game of basketball and was taught by my little league coach and father figure, Frank Walker, he always said it's you get a lot more thrill out of seeing your teammates succeed. And that's how I was taught. I was taught to play the game the right way, get my guys involved, get my teammates involved. You know, when I was first started playing basketball, we had kids that was much smaller than me that couldn't get shots for themselves. So, you know, I would literally, had to get them shots. We had one kid on our team that literally couldn't dribble. So I would get a rebound and actually roll the ball to him all the way up into the hole, and he would just pick it up off the ground and lay it in. And I got a kick out of that. So that's why it's so crazy to me right now that, you know, that's why it's so crazy to me just seeing, where I'm at in the scoring of all-time greats in this game of basketball, because I've never been about scoring.
Nick, LeBron has been a pass-first guy. I learned that from you. So that being said, how unlikely is an accomplishment like this, a scoring accomplishment like this for LeBron?
Well, it stopped being unlikely maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago when you looked at where he was in the ranks. You looked at how healthy he had been. You're like, okay, if he just continues averaging 27 a game and he plays as long as he says he's going to play, this will happen. So it felt anticlimactic last night. We knew it was coming, and the Lakers having a bad season, all that. But if we just go back to when LeBron was drafted and the book on him coming out of St. Vincent, St. Mary, and his high school stat lines, like his high school stat lines are almost identical to his NBA stat line. In high school, he averaged 27, 8, and 6. In the NBA, he's averaged 27, 7, and 7. So he's always been a guy that is pass first to much of the criticism of him throughout the early part of his career, even the championship they lost to the Warriors when they were defending champs. He passes to Kyle Korver in the corner instead of going for it. When the game one of the NBA Finals last year, when they're down one, he passes to George Hill for a layup instead of going himself. Hill misses the free throw. JR has the moment. But it is who he's always been. It is always about making the right play rather than making the play himself. And the statistical profile, if you look at the top 10 scorers in NBA history, LeBron is now fourth in scoring, C, and 10th in assists. The next highest in assists of top 10 scorers is Kobe, who's 31st. Kareem, as a center, is 42nd, which is remarkable. Jordan's the next highest at 44th. So nobody has ever had this combination of prolific passing and prolific scoring. It's the most unique part of LeBron's game.
Yeah, but there's no player ever, and give LeBron credit, but there's no player ever, because I understand. It says LeBron was groomed that way. He also did have that skill set. But Magic Johnson is a pass-first player. All right, LeBron is the next version of Magic Johnson, where scoring was important. How many points LeBron averages first year?
Oh, 20. 21, yeah.
Okay, yeah. How many assists? 5. And then after that, it was lights out. I think he went to 27, 28 his second year. After that, like...
And it's been there throughout.
So for a person who couldn't score, his first introduction into the NBA, we see these guys struggling now. 9 points a game, 8 points a game. LeBron's first time, no college, 20 points a game. So LeBron has always been a scorer, all right? But he never let that become like his number one gift. He never said, I want to be Kevin Durant. I want to be Steph Curry. Because of the Magic Johnson, because of the influence of how he was raised to play the game, he stayed true to that. But for us to think that he was never a great, he's always been a prolific scorer of the basketball. He's just unselfish like no other great player that we've seen, and has a skill set that would lead to him being unselfish.
Nick, of all the things LeBron James has done, his resume reads like, where does this rank among his accomplishments?
For him, like, listen, in my eyes, I wouldn't put it in the top 5, like, because he's going to pass Kobe. He's going to pass Karl Malone. If he plays his full Lakers contract and doesn't have another significant injury, he'll pass Kareem. Like, passing Michael Jordan isn't a record. It's a place on a list. So in my eyes, it's not bigger than the MVPs. It's not bigger than the championships. It's not bigger than the almost career-saving game in Boston, down 3-2 after the Mavericks disaster. But you listen to LeBron. LeBron will tell you this is his most important individual accomplishment to date. Because of what Michael Jordan meant to him, because of what Michael Jordan meant to an entire generation of basketball players, because LeBron has said it, man, that was God to me. Like, that was, or Iverson called him God, pardon me.
Black Jesus.
Thank you. And so LeBron called him his idol repeatedly. Like, there's, to have a guy that you idolized and emulated, and now you're above him in what was his single best basketball trait, because no one would say Jordan was pass first. Everyone considers Jordan either the greatest or the second greatest scorer in the history
score
of basketball.
Score or winning.
What?
Score or winning, yeah, like a champion. Those are the things.
Absolutely. And so, like, to be able to pass him on that list, LeBron went on and on and on yesterday talking about what this meant to him, how he wore the shorts trying to grow up, trying to look like Jordan, wore his socks, trying to be Jordan.
Wore the number.
Everything. And so this is the guy he was, even though everyone has said he's Magic, the guy he was trying to be at least as a kid was Michael, which is why you saw the emotion yesterday. Why for him, he says, it's second only to the Cleveland championship.
Do you agree, CC, that this was not his biggest accomplishment, his most impressive accomplishment?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because if he doesn't have a championship, we don't have the type of celebration. If he don't have them 3 championships, if he didn't have them 2 in Miami, If he didn't have all that before he got to Michael Jordan, we would be discrediting LeBron. We'd be talking, oh, man, he's just George Gervin. Oh, he's just a scoring machine. Oh, he's a, that's all we would be talking about. I'm glad he's a champion on this day because this is one of the few days that LeBron, he can drop his guard and talk about Michael Jordan because the conversation is always, oh, who's greater, him or him? In his mind, Michael Jordan was not approachable when you're growing up. Now, I travel with Mike. Mike and I are the same age. I understand what LeBron's saying. I've heard hundreds of players talk about it, thousands of players who tried to emulate it. But there's only one who can really be compared to him, and that's LeBron James. That's why yesterday was important.
To your point, if he did it without the championships, anyone remember the celebration when Karl Malone passed Jordan in scoring?
Nope.
No. And it was – he did. He did it when Jordan retired. Malone was a few thousand points behind him. A couple years later, Malone's still chugging along, playing well. And it's okay. And I bet a lot of people this morning, when they're seeing these lists on Twitter, they're like, wait, Karl Malone is the second leading scorer in NBA history?
Yep.
No one – a lot of people don't remember that, don't know that, because without the championship credibility,
right.
Scoring that many points is almost used against you. Like, you were that good for that long. You didn't peel one title. Like, and so, fair or not, like, that is a thing. So,
right.
Kobe's moment was an unbelievable moment when Kobe passed Jordan. That team won 21 games that year. I think they were 7-16. But they had a celebration because yeah. Kobe was a minted champion.
Yeah, five times.
Right. A minted champion who truly idolized Jordan and was
and had the same skill set.
Same style of play for sure. Like
crazy
Kobe.
When Kareem passed Michael Jordan. That was, I do remember that one. It was a joke. Coming up, we got to take a break. Can't why is one former...
I got people texting me be like, man.
No, she knows. She knows how it works. It's chronology.
Okay.
Why is one former NBA star calling Kyrie miserable? That's next on First Things First.
Kid, I'm trying to get into the fake word club.
FS1's your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the big personalities on the big stories. We got some big personalities right here on this desk. We get you started here on First Things First. Catch it on Monday through Friday only on
Who
FS1.
Gets them started, Jenna Wolf?
I get them started,
there
Nick
you
Ray.
Go. Well done,
back
Jenna
here
Wolf.
With Chris Broussard, another big
keep
personality.
That, yes.
That
keep
one
her.
I can
that
get.
One. That
she
one. Can show up on
awesome.
The show.
Absolutely.
Her, the British lady, yeah. bring them back.
Here's the deal
Jenna
with
Wolf, bye-bye.
All right, here's the deal with the Celtics, Broussard. Sometimes they look really good and sometimes they look really bad, but almost always Kyrie Irving is right there in the middle of it. Can't seem to escape the finger pointing this season. Charles Barkley had some harsh words for Kyrie, calling him, quote, one of the most miserable people I've ever seen. Broussard, you agree with Chuck?
Well, look, it was kind of a little bit funny what he said and all that, but we have to realize we've seen a lot of people with a lot of money, a lot of success, not be happy, you know, and be miserable.
Time.
So
we just don't have a mic in front of them.
Well, right.
Doing
and, you,
their job.
And you see people, you know, do things. So unfortunately, money, as great as it is, and it answers a lot of problems, there's no doubt, but it doesn't always cure unhappiness.
The human condition.
Right. Right. Now, I hope Kyrie is not miserable. All right. But if he's not, I'm assuming he's not, he needs to look at what Chuck said, though, and say, is this what I'm projecting, though? You know, and change it, my demeanor.
I like that.
Change the way I'm acting. Because hope, like, if he's miserable,
you
then you need to get
to
some
it.
Help.
You're saying listen to it.
Right.
Before you just totally disregard it, listen to it. Why would someone who's covering this game see
exactly.
Is that what they see?
Exactly, right. Chris. I that's what he needs to do. And, you know, and he also needs to sit back and say, maybe I'm not just enjoying all the blessings I have. Let me look at the good things rather than looking at, yeah, I don't like dealing with the media, and you brought up some great points, and it's true. But let me look at the great benefits that I have, the blessings I have, so he can celebrate the great things he has in life.
The one thing that in dealing with especially these NBA players, because that's what we're getting at now, we're getting guys that are starting to react as if, you know, they don't want to talk to the media or them playing and being in the limelight is not part of the overall scheme. And they're not pleased with the type of attention that they're getting. So for me as an NFL player, it's totally different. The amount of times you have to meet with the media. We had it structured. I had one scheduled appointment during and after the game, I would typically meet with the media. But also, I would do this. If someone else had a big game and at my locker, I would address people briefly. I wouldn't go into the main room if they didn't. If someone else had a big game, I would address people at my locker. And before going into the press room, I'd slip off and be off into my car. And it wasn't that I was mad. It wasn't that I was jealous. Now, people wrote things. Oh, Chris Carter, he missed the media session. No, I didn't. I was at my locker, but there were less media requirements. And I know myself, man, I was not happy. And I know there was a few people that I went after because I wasn't happy after practice, before practice, having to answer the redundancy of questions. And there's certain things and there's certain questions, they get you upset when you're talking about your teammates and things like that.
Chris, did you ever interview Patrick Ewing when he was playing? Patrick Ewing had an issue with lights. If a cameraman put the lights on, he hated it. He was miserable. He would snap at you. And admittedly, he's like, shut your lights off. I don't want, and everyone was just trying to do their jobs. Then he went into broadcasting. I spoke to him many years later, and it was, I feel bad the way I reacted. I feel bad the way I snapped. I don't have any of that attention around me now. I wonder, you know, knowing now what I knew then, if I would have handled it differently, if it would have carved a different path for me, if it would have scoped something out differently in my career, maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't. There are a lot of players who don't like it now,
right,
who understand
and they become
it later.
Part of the media.
Right.
That's commonplace for a guy. And I dealt with Patrick and other players who, Patrick really didn't have a great relationship with the media.
Right.
And somewhat, you know, again, I get it because New York, they went at him hard.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes your words are twisted and things are sensationalized. But one thing I used to always look at the Knicks before I even started covering them, you would see on SportsCenter, all of their interviews were like in the parking lot. Like the media would have to go get them outside in the parking lot by their car to chase them down. Yes, I mean, they're running from the media. So KD and Kyrie, they're not the first ones to deal with this. But to your point, technology, now they're out in the public eye even more than they used to be.
Listen, I'm certain of it. There are people watching this right now saying, boo-hoo, cry me a river. You make all this money. You have all this fame. What do you have to worry about? And they're saying that from just air-conditioned apartment. And my life is hard, man. I've got a job I don't like. I'm trying to struggle to pay the bills. And there's someone maybe in Baton Rouge thinking, if I could just get an air-conditioned apartment, right, it would solve everything. That's all I would need. And there's someone somewhere else in the world saying, looking at that person in Baton Rouge in the air conditioning, saying, man, if I could just not have to walk an hour to get water for the day. No matter where you are, you normalize eventually,
right,
your circumstances, and it does not cure overall general happiness. I get it. Life is easier with money, of course. And there are more fun things to do when you are a superstar NBA player than when you're someone working multiple jobs just to pay the bills. No doubt about it. But there's always someone that's got it better than you. And there's always someone that thinks, if I only had it as good as you, it would solve all my problems. What you were alluding to earlier is people that are very, we see a lot of people, not athletes typically, but very famous, very successful people that are in other elements of the entertainment industry struggle so much with happiness that they fall into deep depression.
Right.
How many of our stars, musicians, right, or actors have either overdosed or suicide? Like, this is going to be consistent throughout. And Kyrie, to his detriment, has been very honest about all of it. Like, he's worn his emotions on his sleeve to a degree, which has made him more of a topic than he wants to be.
I think we do a terrible job of trying to appropriate sports skills are gifts with normal living skills. If a guy can shoot from 27 feet in a ridiculous fashion, we just think that the media and everything else that goes with being with that gift, that they're going to be able to handle that. We misappropriate that. We act as if they're going to be great parents. They're going to be great friends. No, they're a great athlete, and typically off the court, off the field, off the baseball diamond, they are just normal to average people. And in some of their skill levels, it's poor.
Right.
Now, we know their athletic skill is they're at a supreme level, at a very, very elite level. But some of the other things they can struggle with in life. But we don't give them that because they're rich, because they're Kevin Durant, because they're Kyrie Irving. And off the court, there is some normality. They just want to be normal. And society typically won't let them.
And I would take it even a step further. Typically, if you reach this level of elite skill at anything at that young of an age, not only when it comes to the other things in your life are you just normal, but very often you're distorted.
Right.
You've spent so much time and attention honing this specific thing, your other skills are deteriorated. They're actually below whatever the
underdeveloped.
Yeah, absolutely. They're below whatever the average.
That's one of the great things, honestly, about LeBron James. He's very well-rounded human being to have such success that he has.
All right, we got to take a break. Chris, stick around. Coming up, did LeBron passing Jordan and scoring cement him as the GOAT? That's ahead on First Things First. Viral. See, LeBron James passed Michael Jordan on the all-time points list last night, but the real accomplishment was being gifted a necklace by 2 Chainz after the game.
He almost got gifted a phone charger, too. Someone's phone charger was on the court.
All right, here, Broussard, who wore better, LeBron, Nick, or 2 Chainz?
Well, they did. I'll give the graphic staff credit.
Nick's looks fresh.
They finally
like
gave me a real chain, not the mall kiosk. $18
in high school.
Right. Are those chain.
Yeah, they did give you a big chain.
No, those are
diamonds.
Pearls.
That's a good looking one.
That's a good looking
chain. You can't tell me those don't look like pearls, Broussard.
We all can
you
tell you.
You and
that.
Marnie and them are the only two. Everyone else knows that's bling bling. Lord help me. Send someone for me right now.
Better job, graphics department. I like it.
She's not playing.
No, she's serious. She thought LeBron and I were both wearing Photoshopped. Well,
speaking of the king, LeBron James, it made history last night sporting sneakers with a message to Michael Jordan. Why? Because he passed his idol for 4th all-time on the NBA scoring list, trailing just now Kareem, Karl, and Kobe. LeBron said this ranks up there with winning a championship, a very emotional tribute to him during the game last night. Broussard, what does this accomplishment mean for LeBron's legacy?
Well, I'm really happy for LeBron because I know, and he's talked about how much it meant to him to pass MJ. So that's great, mm-hmm. but it doesn't
more
mean
more than just
it
the
doesn't,
accomplishment, but passing
yeah,
Michael Jordan.
That was his idol. It doesn't mean he's better than Michael Jordan any more than when Kobe passed MJ or Karl Malone passed him. It meant they were better. None of them are better than Michael Jordan. But one thing I want to bring up with this, LeBron, and a lot of people say, he's a pass-first guy, so for him to be in the top five, I push back against that. He score first. He might be pass 1A, you know, pass 1B, but he's a scorer. LeBron James is a scorer. Now, he doesn't want to go out there and get 35. He could have averaged more points if he focused solely on scoring, but I would say he's a scorer, and then he's also a tremendous passer. I'd say it's 1A or 1B with the passing. But if you look at that top five list, only two of those players, this is a credit to LeBron's just ability, but also mental toughness. Two of those players, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and LeBron James, were ballyhooed and hyped since they were teenagers.
Yep.
Mm. Michael Jordan was, you know, we know he wasn't this blue chip top 10 recruit when he went to North Carolina. Kobe Bryant was a great, you know, high school player, obviously, but the 13th pick in the draft. Mm-hmm. And Karl Malone went to Louisiana Tech. So to have and Kareem did it obviously in a different era. To do what LeBron James has done and live up to the hype, that's tremendous. We've seen O.J. Mayo was hyped as a young kid. He never lived up to it. Remember
yep,
Demetrius Walker on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 14? Mm-hmm. Never lived up to it. So that type
Sebastian
of pressure.
Telfair.
Right, right.
A lot of high school people bring up LeBron being on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a high schooler. A bunch came after
right,
him.
Right.
Listen, he's the most hyped prep athlete ever, and he exceeded the hype. The only maybe athlete that I can think of that was hyped as much, even at a younger age than LeBron, is Tiger Woods. And Tiger Woods lived up to and exceeded the hype, yep. but then obviously had an awful, you know, downfall right. later in his career. To do it, the scoring is unbelievable. And he is, well, even if you want to push back these pass first, of everyone on that list, he's the only one that is really pass anything. Like, he's the only one.
Jordan could pass.
Absolutely, but it was never, no one would say he was passing was 1A or 1B for him. Jordan was an excellent passer, and I actually think Kobe was a very good passer, as well. But it wasn't never part of what they were looking to do regularly up and down the court. But for LeBron to go through being famous, like you mentioned, as a teen, without any missteps,
with the biggest public mistake he made was the decision, right? Or the pep rally that came after the decision, which probably compounded the way he did the decision, is remarkable. To do it and to do what he's done on and off the court while sustaining this level of basketball excellence, 16 years in, 27, 9, and 8 for the season. Obviously, this season itself has been a major disappointment. And this season as a whole is a negative mark, probably legacy-wise, rather than a positive mark. But to get to this point...
Look at those numbers in a bad year,
you look at those numbers and you look at where everyone else was on the list when they got into the top five, where they were in their career. Like where Kobe was on his second to last season. Jordan, when he passed Wilt, he was a wizard, right? You know what? And so Kareem obviously is in a different category because he passed Wilt and played for another 7 years, something like that. But all of it is unprecedented for any player in NBA history.
Where does this accomplishment rank of among all the things that LeBron has accomplished in his life?
I think, look, the greatest thing was the comeback from down 3-1 to Golden State. I mean, that was clearly the greatest thing. And yes. I also think, and then I saw you earlier, the championships, all the championships matter more than this because this isn't the record. I mean, when he gets to number one, if he ever gets there, he'll certainly get to number two, I believe. Then that will be a more significant. But I would say what he just did a couple weeks ago when he became the only player ever in the top 10 in assists, top five scoring, that's much more significant than this because that speaks to the versatility of LeBron James. And one of the arguments, and I know you obviously think he's the GOAT, Nick, one of the great arguments for LeBron in that is the longevity.
Of course.
And no one, I said it last year, no one ever in the history of the game has been in their 15th season the best player in the world. Whether he is this year or not, you know, I don't think he probably isn't anymore. But in your 15th year to be the best player in the world, no one has ever done that. So his longevity, these records speak to that too.
Yeah, LeBron, he is a tremendous basketball player. And however he wants to categorize it, how he grew up, I think it's very, very important that how you're raised and how you're taught something, that you're a reflection of that even when you become a star. He goes back to his first basketball coach who was a father figure to him, taught him about it's more important to get others involved. Now, LeBron also had the skill set, but I'm like you. I don't think LeBron's a pass-first player. He has the skill set of Magic Johnson, but also he has one of the unique abilities to be able to score at a basketball like players we haven't seen. Also, size, weight, speed, and power, all right? He is able to utilize that, especially on the offensive end. So, phenomenal player, skill set like we've never seen before, the overall longevity, how long he was able to stay in his prime. Those are the things that you bring into the conversation as far as him and MJ. But when you grow up idolizing one person, it becomes very, very important as far as the numbers, if you can reach that number. So this is a very, very important milestone for LeBron. I can guarantee if you could pick one number that he could pass Jordan with, we know what number that'd be. Oh, and that's the number that the people who think he's the greatest don't want to talk about. Because if you could put LeBron, if you could put truth serum in him and sit him down and be like, okay, you can have any of LeBron, any of Jordan's numbers, which ones would it be? It'd be them times he was holding up that trophy and the times he was the MVP. So tremendous accomplishment. Also, his career, it's still not over with yet.
Right.
So that's what I want to ask you, Broussard, because I know for Chris what the standard is if he's going to come to my side of the equation on LeBron's the greatest player ever. Because you said it's championships, but Chris is funny championship math. He gave him two for the championship in Cleveland, that title.
Well, you have to because they beat one of the greatest teams ever.
And they came back.
Right.
Came back greatest comeback in NBA history.
The point I'm making is for Chris, LeBron doesn't need six actual
rings.
That's
one of the worst championship teams ever in NBA history, the Cavs with LeBron. From talent.
In 2016?
Yeah, I'm talking about a team. Like that team.
How many teams? Kyrie and Kevin Love.
But how many teams could that team beat?
Well, the argument for LeBron is...
I think that was a great team.
I think the 2016 Cavs and the Cavs the year that Kevin Durant first went to the Warriors, that Cavs team was the best one, I thought. The one that lost in five to the Warriors. Yes, I thought that was the best Cavs team. I thought that the level their offense was at in the postseason was unbelievable. It's neither here nor there. The reason that I can't just do the championship math one for one is because all championships aren't created equal. All competition is not created equal. And that is a team accomplishment. Now, in basketball, one player has more impact on it than in any other sport.
Yeah, especially when you're first team All-NBA, both sides, offense and defense.
Absolutely.
I think you want to know what would it take.
For you.
What would I have to see?
For you, what would you?
I don't know that LeBron can pass Jordan. I think it's not for me. It's not just six rings to three rings. I think Jordan had no weaknesses. You nitpick when you're talking about guys this great. You're nitpicking. LeBron has a weakness, the foul shooting. I think Jordan was a better post player, even though he was smaller. He had a better post game in an era where you had 7-foot great centers, and Jordan had a better post game. I think Jordan was a slightly better finisher. Again, going against 7-foot shot blockers, the best era of big men ever. Mm-hmm. So I just think Jordan, I think he also could fit better into a system. He didn't become the system. He was able to fit, under Phil Jackson especially, fit into a system where LeBron kind of has to become the system. So I think that made him easier to play with. So I just think that Jordan was a flat-out better player. I can't think of a weakness.
So that argument, while I disagree with it, that argument to me is so much more salient than the 6-3. Because that argument is about who they are as a basketball player, what they were and weren't able to do. Because do I believe that if you could do this, if you put Michael Jordan on, throughout his career, prime, on every Cavs team and Heat team that LeBron's been on over the last 8 seasons, I think he would have 3 championships. They wouldn't be the same 3. I think he would have won the first 3 in Miami, and I don't think Jordan, with that last Heat team or any of the Cavs teams, would have won a title. And
that's pure speculation.
Of course,
we have to go on what happened.
Well, okay, but hold on. But what you're saying is also a different type of speculation, because what happened is LeBron's got him trumped in every stat. LeBron's got more points, more rebounds, more assists, higher field goal percentage.
But they're not per game.
What?
Per game, Jordan averaged 3 more points per game. Jordan's PER is higher.
Per game, he has him trumped in everything except for points.
One more rebound. He's, 3 inches taller. He should average more rebound. One more rebound per game, 2 more assists per game.
Yes.
Career.
Absolutely.
I mean, one more rebound when you're that much bigger, that's not that. I could argue Jordan was as good or better a rebound.
Okay, and so.
Just for size.
So, but all of that, is the speculation you were talking about. So you said PER, that is the advanced stat Jordan has. LeBron has value over replacement player, box score plus minus, win shares offensive and defensive. The other element to it is that is indefinable, and it's just what you value is the longevity of it. Is how much longer LeBron can keep this up, and how much that matters in your eyes.
I would say at some point longevity can work against you. Michael Jordan essentially, we know he played.
Kareem.
We know he played 15 years. I would even say 11, he really played 11 years.
11, because
two he was hurt,
mm-hmm.
or one he was hurt,
one
and then
was
one
the
he came back from
partial season
baseball.
And two in Washington.
He won 6 rings in 11 years. At some point, LeBron has won 3 in 16. So at some point, the longevity can work against you in an argument where you're nitpicking. You know, it doesn't have to be the longest career, but who got more done in their career? And Jordan, obviously, 6 rings and 11 rings in 11 years beats 3 in 16. Or 17 or 18.
Well, no, I don't think championships are the end-all be-all of the discussion. I think if they were, then we would talk more about Bill Russell. We would talk a lot less about Wilt. We'd talk less about Jerry West. We'd talk more about, I don't think championships
Russell
are the
didn't dominate individually statistically the way Jordan did.
No,
Jordan
but he won
dominated
5 MVPs.
Statistically, yeah. and winning-wise.
All right. We got to the bottom
of
that.
Sorry
finally.
To represent my case. I've been saying the guy didn't have no weakness. I guess that's the first time he heard that.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.